Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 29th of November. Hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. It is time for all things political, and there's been a lot going on over the course of the last, well, since we last talked, Tuesday was the last time I was here. George Waller is joining us this hour. He teaches at the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley. He teaches a number of different courses, American government and politics, political science, comparative politics, international politics, media and politics, the politics of American minorities, campaign and election analysis, and more. We are going to be looking at, and these are just areas that I thought were interesting. Please feel free to bring up whatever you would like during the course of this hour. Of course, we'll be talking about WikiLeaks, the leaked cables, some are saying compromise American security. We got pages and pages and pages here, but what's in this that could be problematic? Do you think this is a good thing or a bad thing to know the inner workings of government? I was struck by, and I'll ask our guest about this and you as well. Bob Herbert had an interesting column in the Times on Saturday in which he said the ranks of the poor may be swelling and families forced out of their foreclosed homes may be enduring a nightmarish holiday season, but American companies have just experienced their most profitable quarter ever. As the Times reported last week, U.S. firms earned profits at an annual rate of $1.659 trillion in the third quarter, the highest total since the government began keeping track more than six decades ago. So where's the money going? And we'll be talking about North and South Korea. Is there a possibility of reunification? What's the probability of a war here? How is China getting involved diplomatically? Is China the key to easing tensions? And whatever else you would like to discuss. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you would like to send an email, you're welcome to do that. That's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. George Waller, our guest, assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley. George, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I hope you had a really good Thanksgiving.
I did indeed.
Good. Oh, yeah. It was great. It was great. Well, let's start with WikiLeaks, which is all over the Times today and other newspapers. Is this a blow to national security or not?
Well, it's hard to say at this point. There's so much to glean out of what's going to be or what has been released in WikiLeaks. I think what's clear, however, is that the nature of modern diplomacy has changed to the point where it is now become public diplomacy. It's very, very difficult to keep these kinds of sensitive communiques away from the public, given the changes in communications technology. At the very least, what is clear from what has been released on WikiLeaks is it creates a good deal of embarrassment for the United States with some of the comments that were made in those communiques about foreign leaders and the like. And that could be potentially damaging for the reputation of the United States as it goes forward with its diplomacy with foreign nations.
So it really calls for a whole different kind of diplomacy, a redefinition of the word.
Absolutely it does. I think diplomats are keenly aware now that they've got to be extremely careful in what they say and how they say things about foreign leaders or about the people they are engaged in their talks with. And it's just going to be a matter of adapting diplomacy to the nature of the times. Care is going to be of the essence.
Mm-hmm. It looked at what, the last 3 years? Is this how far they go back?
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. So it's back. Well, I think there's a number of different administrations actually that some of these documents reveal communications from. So it appears to be something that has been a sort of standard practice in the way diplomats have communicated over the years.
And what about newspapers publishing this information? Should they?
Well, that's a really interesting sort of conundrum here. I mean, there, of course, is the notion that the public has a right to know versus the idea that there are the needs of preserving and protecting confidentiality in these kinds of communications. And It's hard to come down on one side or another on that. I mean, certainly one has to be very, very careful if one is a publisher to release information that would indeed compromise national security, things like weapons programs and other very classified information. This kind of thing, I'm not sure exactly how this plays out in terms of whether it's wise for newspapers to publish this information and preserve the public's right to know, or whether newspapers and publishers have to be very, very careful about potentially compromising national security.
Wouldn't you have loved to have heard the telephone calls that took place over the weekend between Hillary Clinton and heads of state in other countries? Those must have been interesting.
You better believe it. You know that there was a good deal of scrambling as it became apparent that this kind of information was going to be released, so that there would be some way to sort of patch things before, you know, they all got out there. I suspect that there's going to be some understanding on the part of foreign leaders, because I kind of think that this kind of thing doesn't only occur with respect to the United States. I'm sure that the same kinds of communications could potentially be leaked about what other countries' diplomats have said about the United States, for example, and other foreign leaders. So I think there's going to be a great deal of sensitivity in the diplomatic community at large about these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. I thought that collecting intelligence information on the head of the UN, which is something that I guess Condoleezza Rice and Hillary Clinton were interested in doing, was kind of unusual.
Well, it is. Although, you know, I'm not sure that it's as unusual as it may appear to be. I think there's always an effort to sort of get a heads up on just exactly what the background is of anyone in the international arena who has a position of responsibility and power. So I think this is something that has gone on. I think the very public way in which it has been released now, I think, is what makes it very, very different.
Right. Let's talk about where all the money is going here. I was so struck by this report last week, and I wonder what companies these are. American companies experiencing their most profitable quarter ever.
Yeah.
Ever. $1.659 trillion in the third quarter, the highest total since the government began keeping track more than six decades ago, and yet our unemployment rate is 10%. I don't quite understand.
Yeah, I think what we've been seeing is that many, many companies have pulled back on production and have had full warehouses with material that needs to be sold. And I think what's happening is, as they've cut back on production, they've lowered those production costs, obviously, and it's created wide-scale unemployment. I think what's going to drive the economy is the degree to which Americans begin to spend again. Because as they consume more, those inventories of product are going to be drawn down, and that's going to create a need for greater production, which potentially should result in higher employment. But it is a bit disconcerting knowing the condition of many people's lives as they struggle with unemployment, and knowing the condition of the economy, to get these reports about these companies making huge profits. I mean, unbelievable kinds of profits. But again, I think what you're going to see is, if consumers begin to buy again, the companies are going to need to produce, and that's going to create more jobs. We'll just have to wait and see.
Some of the news reports that we're seeing, and they seem to be endless because a lot of people go shopping after Thanksgiving,
right.
And now today they're doing it online. A lot of the reports said that there was a big demand for luxury items. There obviously are people in this country who are doing very well, who are buying diamond necklaces and all of this fancy stuff. Who are those people?
Well, that's hard to say who those people are. I think one of the things that I saw from some of the reports about Black Friday was that it seemed as though crowds were up, but spending wasn't up all that much. And I do think what's happened is that a lot of people, after having struggled with 2 years of a really, really poor economy, are beginning to sort of take the idea that maybe we are on an uptick, and they're little interested in in instead of denying themselves the things that they've been wanting for some time, are now starting to look at those things again. But as far as those who go out and buy diamond necklaces and the like, I'm not sure who those people are. I don't think there are very many of our listeners here today who are probably in that category where they're buying these big luxury items. But apparently there are those out there who have the wherewithal to do that and are not denying themselves that opportunity.
We're all just living in a different world.
Indeed.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. We'll talk about it. We have a caller who wants to talk about North Korea because
sure.
China decided that they were going to, well, they called for emergency consultation. So, and I think we're doing our 9 o'clock on all of this tomorrow. Let's start our calls with Carl from Houston, Minnesota, who'd like to talk about that issue, I believe. Hi, Carl.
Hi.
Hi. Can you speak a little louder? Your phone line is kind of crummy.
Oh, sure.
There
can
we go.
Hear me better now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, you said to call in and comment and so forth, so I just had a comment about North Korea, and my question was, you know, why don't we turn North Korea into an ally? You know, they're starving people, they don't have jobs. We helped rebuild Japan, turn them into a powerhouse. We moved industry to China, turned them into a powerhouse nation. North Korea, we buy 400,000 cars a year from them, I believe. Why don't we set up some industry in North Korea? Give them something to do so they can have something to buy some food and try and turn them into an ally. That was my comment about North Korea.
All right, Carl.
A peaceful solution.
All right.
Well, I'm not sure that North Korea is receptive to the idea of becoming an ally with the United States or with the West. North Korea has been, for decades now, a very closed society, very much under the control of Kim Il-jung and the leadership there. I think what we're seeing here with North Korea is an attempt to sort of flex its muscle and to sort of put the United States and South Korea on notice that they're not going to tolerate the kinds of exercises that have been taking place by the United States and South Korea military near their borders. I'm not so sure that North Korea is interested in pushing this over the brink. But as far as becoming an ally of North Korea, I'm not sure that they're receptive to that, and I'm not sure that we would find a whole lot of political capital here in the United States, and particularly in the Congress, to go down that road.
Can we talk a little bit about what China said and how it fell short from what the United States government wanted China to do? I think they see China as being really important here, and instead they called for emergency consultations, whereas we wanted them to really blast North Korea for taking the first step here toward, you know, what could be a horrible war.
Yeah, you know, the Chinese are definitely pivotal here in these talks. I mean, it's clear that North Korea and China are allies, and it's clear that China has a good deal of influence over what North Korea does. I think what China is trying to do, obviously, here is protect its own interests with respect to North Korea, and is not so receptive to the notion that the United States wants to have China condemn North Korean actions. I think China's taking a very conservative and slow-go approach to this to sort of ratchet down the tensions, but at the same time protect what it sees as its own interests with respect to North Korea.
We are going to, we just had word that Rhonda has booked, he's a wonderful guest, Han Park from the University of Georgia is going to be our guest tomorrow. He's the person who's traveled to North Korea more than anybody else in the world. He arranged Jimmy Carter's trip there, ABC News trip there, and is a very interesting guy. So we will look at this in depth tomorrow. But we can also talk about it today, too. It's All Things Political for this Monday, the 29th of November. Our guest is Professor George Waller from the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley. Our number is 800-486-8655. And the email, if you'd like to use that, is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to your phone calls, and let us go next to Sue from Eau Claire. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Kathleen. I just wanted to give you a quote from Will Rogers, who was a humorist during the Depression, and he said, there's the same amount of money there's always been, it's just in different people's pockets.
Who's got it? Who's got the pockets filled with money, Sue?
oh, well, there's lots of people who hold just oodles and gobs of corporate paper, and there are very, 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 very wealthy people, and they're making their money in China and overseas, and they've shipped our jobs overseas, and we have not done anything to prevent it.
Thank you for your call. George, you want to respond?
Well, I think it you know, there's always a Will Rogers quote for any situation. he's a great humorist.
Yes.
But you know, what he says has certainly has an element of truth in it, and I think it's clear that we're seeing this kind of struggle, you know, in terms of the distribution of wealth and income in this country. I think you see it, for example, even in the deliberations in Congress with respect to the extension of the Bush tax cuts.
Yes.
Whether they should go to all, or including the very wealthy, or whether they should just be restricted to those in the middle class. So we'll see how that all plays out, but it clearly is the evidence that Will Rogers was a pretty wise guy.
Yeah, thanks very much, Sue. We like to have quotes from Will Rogers and others. What do you think is going to happen with that Bush tax cut? Now, give me a timeline here. We've got just a short period of time for the Democrats if they were going to cut that off. It would have to happen soon, right?
Yeah, that this lame duck session of Congress is going to be very interesting to watch. I know that the Majority Leader, Harry Reid, has suggested that what the Senate do is hold two votes. One would be on the Democratic plan, which would confine that tax cut extension just to the middle class, and then another vote on the Republican leader Mitch McConnell's plan to extend the cuts to everyone. And what's likely to happen is that both of those will be defeated, because the Republicans will not vote for the extension just to the middle class, and the Democrats won't vote for the extension to everyone, including the very wealthy. And then what will happen is there will be some real sort of negotiations that will have to take place between the two parties. It's clear this has to happen, and it has to happen soon, because if it doesn't, what will happen is that the failure to act would mean that big tax increases would occur for all at every income level. I don't think there is anybody on either party, including the President Obama, who want to see that happen. So it seems to me that something will come out of this. I know one of the ideas that's been floated around is a temporary kind of extension of those tax cuts for the very wealthy, with a date certain for those to end. But it'll be very interesting to watch how this
right.
plays out.
And why would – is it because the Democrats are getting money from the same people who have a lot of money and corporate interests as the Republicans? Because it seems to me as though that would be one of the tenets of their philosophy, that they seem to be going against that by saying, well, let's just let the very wealthy among us continue to have tax breaks. Is that something that Democrats believe in?
Well, no. I think part of the problem, and this is what Republicans have said, when the tax cuts, as Barack Obama has said, would be retained for those earning $250,000 or less, that there's a lot of small businesses who would find themselves in a position of facing what Republicans will characterize as tax hikes. And that is seen as potentially being damaging to an economic recovery. So I think the focus here is on what to do about small businesses who earn, you know, above $250,000 a year. I know that one suggestion was put forward by Chuck Schumer of New York to simply have those extensions, the extension of the cuts occur for anyone up to $1 million, and then have those millionaires face an elimination of the Bush tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
But again, these are lots of things that are sort of floating out there as to exactly what to do about these in order to make sure that those tax increases don't go into effect when that expires.
No, it's going to be interesting to watch what happens.
Indeed.
Yeah. George is next from Milwaukee. Hello, George.
Hey, yeah, talking about the WikiLeaks. I think that the major problem that is never really talked about, that our own public officials feel, is it's not so much, sure, it's an embarrassment to them in some of these situations, because communications that they thought were going to be private are now being shared. However, I think it's the bigger case is really that it pops the bubble of America's exceptionalism, the idea of it, that somehow we have this very benign role in the world. Now, all other countries of the world that deal with the United States understand that we are most and foremost interested in our own self-interest, and that we will cooperate with them when we think it's in our best interest. That's a given. And so, but I think that a lot of American people might be surprised to find out that we participate in the same kinds of trickery, manipulation, illegal kinds of things that we've always thought just pertains to others.
And, George, don't you think that most countries operate in their own self-interest?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, when you've got international politics, which is essentially the province of self-interested sovereign nations, I mean, that's always been the case. I do think the caller has an interesting point about these perceptions on the part of the American public that somehow the United States is held to a different standard, and this idea of the United States being, you know, the force for pure good in the world. I think in some respects what we see from the WikiLeaks and from other things is a real sort of wake-up call that the United States does in fact operate in furtherance of its own self-interest. And sometimes that may mean we appear to be a bit hypocritical, but again, this is something that's been sort of the regular way in which these kinds of diplomatic negotiations have taken place. They just haven't been as public as we see now with WikiLeaks and some of these other reports.
Yeah. And the other George, I forgot I had two Georges here, which is unusual. The George who called in from Milwaukee. What do you think will be the long-term ramifications of this kind of publication? How does it change things?
Hard to tell. I mean, like I said, I think that, you know, I guess what I would like to see is that our own people have a little more adult attitude towards our own role in the world. That's what I would like to see happen from it, because I think that other nations have known, you know, what the United States has been interested in, meaning we promoting ourselves. I'm not saying that there's something wrong with that, but I think that it's time for Americans to understand that we are not this pure body that somehow only has good intentions for the rest of the world, and that we will only act in others' best interests. I think that that's a bubble that does need to be popped.
Thank you, George, for your call. Let's go to Daryl from Exonia next. Hi, Daryl.
Hi.
Hi.
I had an article because you said, well, where's the money that Steve Jobs and Apple Computer was sitting on $51 billion in cash and not paying any dividends and just sitting on that money? And even a lot of these other companies are making profits. All these corporate keep that they're going. Interest is zero, so they're just making and putting it away somewhere.
Okay, I think we got the gist of that. Unfortunately, we're only hearing every other word of what you're saying, but you got the point, right, George?
Yeah, let's face it. I mean, there are things that are written into our tax code and in the way investments are done that clearly present an opportunity for people who have lots and lots of money to make more money. And, you know, this is something that gets caught up in the public court of politics. I mean, clearly the whole idea here about the extension of the Bush tax cuts is something that clearly goes to this. But I think it's obvious that there are some things that need to be done about reining in this kind of immense profits. You know, there's some who say, you know, it would be one thing if those profits were funneled back into economic growth and jobs and the like. But
right.
When it's just sort of being kept and sort of hoarded, I guess, that's what tends to rub people the wrong way.
Well, it's probably not good for the country. We're in bad shape here.
Yeah.
People don't have jobs, or they're kind of underemployed. Their wages have gone down. They're having problems with their pensions, et cetera, to have that wealth there somewhere and not having it go to people so that they can live doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, that's true. And I think what you've seen, you know, recently with Warren Buffett and Bill Gates and Ted Turner coming out to sort of organize the billionaires' approach to returning some of that wealth to benefit the country and benefit the economy, I think is it may be something that ought to take place a little bit more broadly.
Yeah. Thanks, Gerald, very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. And our email, we have a few of those. I haven't looked at this in a while, and here they are. Email is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Here's an email from Tom in River Falls. The bulk of these profits are related to Asian growth, and multinational companies like GE, GM, Caterpillar that operate overseas are showing high profits due to non-domestic activity. The domestic activity shows slow retail growth because ordinary citizens are worried about their jobs and personal financial health, and the items they do buy are manufactured overseas, sold cheaply in the U.S. due to the Chinese, German, Japanese, Korean currency manipulation. U.S. unemployment will remain at or above 9% so long as the U.S. is hampered by abusive trading practices of world trading partners.
Yeah, that was obviously something that President Obama recognized and attempted to deal with in his recent trip to Asia and the Seoul summit. But you know, he didn't get very far in those talks in terms of getting the Chinese and others to develop a different kind of currency policy. So that's a very, very difficult thing to deal with. Now, we're dealing clearly in a world of a globalized economy, and again, you see countries pursuing their self-interest here, and so it's a thorny thing.
Yeah. Hugh is next from Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. I'd like to get back to Korea. America seems to be thinking that China can negotiate between North and South Korea. My view is that it is not in China's interest to restrain its ally, North Korea, and I'll give you the reason why. Already, the president of South Korea, our ally, has had to apologize to his people and lose face. The defense secretary had to resign because they have been attacked by North Korea, and they've done nothing. Their island has been attacked. Earlier this year, a ship was sunk, killing sailors. They've done nothing. And why I think it's in China's interest not to help the United States, because we are shown as someone who is not really helping. We may have troops in South Korea, but if anything, you know, Obama's administration is trying to restrain the South as much as possible. And the thing is, that is not our only ally. We have Japan, and Japan sees us as weak. Taiwan, or the formerly the Republic of Korea, a country long with a greater population than France. China wants it, and I won't go through the legalese. They do have a certain claim on it, but Taiwan has not been a part of mainland China for a century. Why should a country as large as France be given over to mainland China? But they see that we are the paper tiger. We are not going to help them. As they see us and the South Koreans backing down to this aggressive bully in North Korea, it's in China's interest for their benefit not to do nothing and let America be seen as weak. And unfortunately, that seems to be the case.
George.
Well, I understand the caller's point. I'm curious as to what China feels it would gain by putting the United States in that kind of a position. I don't think it's in China's interest at all to encourage a war between North Korea and South Korea. I do think there's something to be said for the notion that the Chinese clearly understand that the United States is in a very, very difficult position with respect to what it can do to back South Korea in this standoff here. I think one of the things that people are keenly aware of is that if North Korea were to decide to go ahead and invade the South would pretty quickly be overrun by North Korean forces. I don't think China sees that as in its interest, because I think that would clearly destabilize the region and clearly put China's trade agreements with the United States in particular jeopardy. So I don't think, you know, neither of the major powers, China or the United States, really want this to escalate to the point where it becomes that kind of a standoff or confrontation, not just between North and South Korea, but between China and the United States. So I'm not certain that China has a whole lot of interest in sort of allowing this to continue ratcheting toward the kind of catastrophe that would occur should the North invade the South. It is also clear, as the caller said, that to a great extent, South Korea has lost face with its people. There are those who are clearly calling for a more aggressive action by the South against North Korea. But to escalate it, to put this whole region in this kind of destabilized position, I don't think is in anybody's interest.
No. And you have this big unknown with his son taking over, who's got a lot of analysts are saying prove that he's a tough guy.
Right, and I think this is part of what's occurring here.
It's a little frightening. It's more than a little frightening.
Yeah, well, North Korea is it's definitely one of those rogue states, as you will, and very hard sometimes to figure out just exactly what their motivations are.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Hugh, for your call. We go to Emily from La Crosse. Hi, Emily.
Good morning.
Hi.
I was reading something this morning that was saying, and I'm not sure whether or not it's true, so I just kind of wanted to call and get opinions on it, that the government, the U.S. government, was taking over BitTorrent and other torrent search engines in kind of response to piracy. And I wasn't exactly sure what that was, and partially maybe as a response to the WikiLeaks situation to kind of show that they have a presence on the Internet. So I was wondering if there was any, you guys had any information on that or would be willing to talk about that at all.
Boy, I don't know of anything in particular. I mean, I think it's clear that there are concerns at the highest levels in Washington about how to deal with or get a rein on the cyberspace and the communications that can take place, because it's something that's very, very difficult to control, and it's obviously something that can create these situations that we've seen with the WikiLeaks documents that create embarrassments. I don't know, though, however, how successful any government can be to totally clamp down on the flow of information. We've reached a place where technology just allows that to be overridden. People can hack into things, and it's just something that clearly is cause for concern, and yet I'm not sure what governments can do to put a lid on all of that.
Well, what happened yesterday? I was watching the news last night, and there was a report that the information was slowly coming out because the site crashed, and then the State Department made some cryptic comment about, oh, we don't know how that could have happened.
Yeah.
So can't they do that with it? Aren't we in an age where you can do that?
Oh, I'm sure there are people working on doing that kind of thing. I mean, you've seen this occur just in free reign across the Internet, with people being able, teenagers being able to hack into things. So I'm
right.
Sure there are people who are working on doing those kinds of things in order to disrupt that. But it was back up, and it was the
right.
Information came out, and I think as soon as you try to do something, there'll be a way to address it, and the information will eventually find its way.
Mm. Thanks, Emily, for your call. Frank from Madison. Hello, Frank.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
Quite a beautiful day.
It is.
May I say that there's a flip side to the universal tax cut extension debate, which is that this lame duck Congress may not renew unemployment insurance
right.
benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So counting on the consumer to revive the economy
when not only unemployment is high, but there isn't even money to go to the grocery store,
mm-hmm.
Which is in itself a stimulus, will occur. Mm-hmm. And I would like to point out that amongst the many other things that's happening, the most significant is that we've just gone over the red line for the climate. The scientists are pretty sure that we're going to 4 degrees by the middle of the century, not 2. And there's nothing but tepid engagement at Cancun, where COP16 is going on. That's the climate conference. So the most immediate thing is Christmas is going to be grim. Mm. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
Yeah, the caller is right that there was an attempt in the House to extend the federal unemployment checks for the 2 million people whose benefits will run out during the holiday season, but that was defeated when Republicans objected, saying that the cost of that 3 months extension should be paid for so that it doesn't add to the deficit. So that has become a political hot potato here as well. As far as the caller's comments on the climate change, I think it's clear that there is, at least in the scientific community and at many of the higher echelons of energy departments and the like, governments around the world, that something needs to be done. This is why there is that conference, that week-long conference in Cancun starting this week. It's very, very difficult when you try to reach agreements internationally on the elimination of greenhouse gases, because that falls disproportionately often on the most developed countries and some of the least developed countries of the world. And again, the idea that countries pursue self-interest is what tends to get in the way of reaching an agreement about elimination or reduction of those greenhouse gas levels.
It's All Things Political for this Monday, the 29th of November. Professor George Waller is our guest from the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program, our guest is from the Hoover Institution at Stanford University, author of Schoolhouses, Courthouses, and Statehouses, Solving the Funding Achievement Puzzle in America's Public School. He's done a very interesting study, mostly looking at math performance by students in the United States, breaking it down state by state and performing and looking at our performance compared with other countries in the world. We do not do well at all. The only state that does fairly well is Massachusetts. So what's up? We'll talk about that, hour number two. George Waller is here now. It's All Things Political. And let's go to Gary in Milwaukee next. Hi, Gary.
Yes, good morning. Earlier in the program, you were talking about how well our corporations are doing. But I want to bring up that the banking system still is not doing well. M&I, our largest bank, is losing money. Anchor Bank had to be bailed out by a group of investors, and other banks are in the same position. They're just not doing well. And I'm in the real estate industry, and I've been doing this my whole life, and I am trying to do some developing, and there are two properties that I am trying to buy at the moment, and I have a very good track record. I have a very good history of developing. I'm in a strong financial position, and I just can't find a bank that will back me, and these are banks that I know, banks that I've dealt with in the past, banks that have financed projects for me in the past. I'm not anybody new to them, but it just is very difficult to get a bank to back me on either one of these projects.
In my opinion,
they're strong projects that would be successful. And what I would like you to first comment on the banking industry, and secondly, I'd like to know, what percent of our economy does the real estate industry represent? And it seems to me that if our corporations are doing well, the real estate, if we can call that a entity, the real estate entity, the real estate aspect of our economy still is not.
What are the banks saying to you, Gary?
so I'd like comments.
Gary?
Yes.
What are the banks saying to you? Why won't they help you?
The banks are looking at their own balance sheets, and they're being pulled down by projects that they have financed in the past. M&I is the prototype of this. They have a large inventory of real estate developments to a big extent in the Southwest that are losing the real estate investments. The real estate developments are not doing well. They're losing money, and therefore M&I Bank is being pulled down by those losses.
George, what do you say?
Well, it's true. One of the most difficult problems our economy faces has to do with the credit crisis. These major financial institutions that got themselves into real trouble with their previous lending practices are now really, really cutting down on extending credit. And clearly, the extent to which that affects home buying, which is one of the greatest engines of our national economy, is highly, highly problematic for economic growth. Everybody knows that, if you encourage home buying, and people will consume, and that fuels the economy. Very difficult for people to get home loans. You find that so many people are facing foreclosures and coupled with long-term unemployment, this is a real, real problem. Of course, there isn't a whole lot of political will out there to do much more after we already had the bailout of the major financial institutions, and it doesn't seem likely that there would be political support to do it for other banking institutions. So they're hedging their bets, and they're being very, very careful about extending credit to even some very worthy projects.
Thank you, Gary. I hope things look up for him. Let's go to Ruth in Madison. Hi, Ruth.
Good morning, Professor Waller and Kathleen. I need a little explanation. I'm confused. If the Bush cuts are not extended for people making over $250,000, how does that affect small businesses? Aren't they going by a different tax system entirely?
Well, they are to some extent, but many small business owners file taxes that would put them in the category of earning more than $250,000 a year, and that would by the Republicans' estimation mean that those small business owners would face tax increases at a time when small business is struggling in this tough economy. So that's the contention. And again, there's a whole lot that needs to be worked out in terms of how we address what to do about those cuts, because they do expire very, very soon. And if they do expire, it means everybody faces tax increases.
But it wouldn't be that hard, would it, to deal specifically and specially with small businesses?
Well, you would think it wouldn't be that difficult. you would think that there should be a way to protect small businesses from a potential increase here. Unfortunately, neither side has really sat down to work out what that would be, and that's what we're waiting to see emerge in the Congress of the United States.
Hmm.
Well, would it also be possible to extend that upwards, maybe to making $500,000?
You sure could. I mean, as I said, Chuck Schumer has said, "Why don't we just extend it up to $1 million?" And then and then those making more than $1 million would be subject to the tax increases. But
well, personally, I don't think I'd go that high. But
you know. I think the idea here is that clearly somewhere we've got to settle on how to deal with that small business issue so that we can arrive at some agreement here before these tax cuts or these tax cuts expire.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. When we were talking about this issue earlier, George, you used this phrase, real negotiations on this particular issue. Let's extend that a little bit. What about real negotiations on all of the issues that will be before the new Congress? Are you worried that the partisan differences are so there that there won't be real negotiations on much, or will everybody surprise us?
Well, I'm not certain that a whole lot's going to occur in this lame duck Congress, which is problematic, because that would mean, unless there is some agreement reached here, those Bush tax cuts will expire and tax increases will occur across all income levels, which is really problematic. I'm more optimistic that some sort of an agreement will be worked out to solve that issue, because I don't think that works to either party's best interest. There's another looming deadline coming up, however, and that is on Wednesday, the 3rd of December. Congress is under a deadline to pass a temporary spending bill to avoid a government shutdown.
Oh.
And there hasn't been a single spending bill passed in the Senate for the budget year that began October 1st. And unless they reach some sort of an agreement here about what to do about that, there will be a government shutdown starting on the 3rd of December, which is Wednesday of this week. My guess is that what's going to happen there is there may be some temporary patch to allow an extension of government operations into February, when the new Congress,
right,
which is going to
right,
be dominated by anti-spending Republicans, is going to come in and then deal with these issues. So a lot to look at and a lot to pay attention to this week, even, in terms of what's happening in that lame duck session.
Thanks, Ruth, for the call. Carl in Madison, hi.
Hi, Kathleen and Professor Waller. I was talking to your producer. I was checking in at the time that the question about Cancun came up, and I do want to add something in addition to the last caller. But I used to be a small business owner, and I've been following this debate, about the tax cuts for, it'll hurt small business people. Listen, small business people are up to the ears in debt, and there's no way that that's going to hold them back, with the additional taxes, because they won't ever have to pay them. They're so deep in the hole. And not only that, it's graduated in this sense, and what's going to happen is the amount of money that they would pay in additional taxes wouldn't pay for even a half an employee at, let's say, $45,000 a year. But let me get back to my question about Cancun. The ClimateGate fiasco back whenever that was, Fox News is still saying that that showed that there was not consensus among scientists. And that's just not true. And I'm appalled that they still continue on that fallacy. And my reading is that people over most of the world, and even the people in government, know that there's problems coming with climate change. And at this time, in the United States, we're the worst place holding back any change in the climate change policy. And I think this is one of the unique opportunities, if we could get a turnaround in the population of this country, where we could apply real leadership to changing that attitude and get something done. And I'd like to know what the professor thinks.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a complicated issue, and I would say clearly the United States operating in its own self-interest is concerned about limits on the emission of greenhouse gases that would represent, in the minds of many, a significant cost to many of the businesses and industries here in the United States that produce goods and services. But, I mean, China also, for example, is opposed to aggressive climate control legislation, because that would mean that China would have to ramp down its production, or at least deal with its emission of greenhouse gases. Many of the developing nations of the world who are just beginning put together an industrial infrastructure would find themselves burdened by the additional costs with respect to elimination or reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. So it's very, very complicated. I do believe that there is a recognition among most thinking people that there is indeed a consensus, a scientific consensus, that climate change is in fact occurring. There's this cadre of people out there, including many of the newly elected members of the Congress of the United States, who will continue to say that that it's a myth and that there's no consensus within the scientific community. And that makes it very, very difficult politically to advance climate control or climate change legislation in the Senate and in the Congress, and even more problematic internationally.
We have about a minute left. Give me your thoughts about the new Congress, the Congress that will start in January. Do you worry that we won't get much done the next couple of years, or do you think that the American people will demand that the two sides get together?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I think we're going to have to wait and see how that plays out, because I think the American people didn't give Republicans a mandate. I think what the American people were looking for is working together to solve problems. And I think they're a little bit tired of the partisan bickering that's occurred for too long in Washington that doesn't really get a handle on and address the things that really impact people's lives.
Mm.
One of the most interesting things is going to watch what happens within the Republican Party between the mainstream sort of establishment Republicans and the new Tea Party Republicans that were elected. That's going to be fun to watch.
Thank you, Professor Waller, so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Our guest this hour, Professor George Waller, assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley, teaches all kinds of courses in political science and politics of American minorities, media and politics, American government, etc. Tomorrow during this time period, we will be speaking with Han Park from the University of Georgia, who has traveled more than anybody from this country to North Korea and has put together some remarkable visits on the part of high-level people to that country. So he'll have a lot to say and will inform us about what in the world is going on there. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Chrissy Pease. Thanks to Chrissy for producing this hour and for doing on-air production. News ahead. We'll be back.